All right, ready to go. Thanks for showing up. My name is Mark Galby, and I work over for the Risk Authority. We're over on Page Mill Road, and my name is Mark Galby. I'm a manager of Risk Finance, also assistant vice president of Risk Management. And we just wanted to go through, I know that this is a transition to practice seminar, and I think the most effective way to demonstrate to you what that is to show you what your current coverages are through the Summit professional liability policy, because we think that we're pretty liberal, generous with regards to those coverages, and it'll give you some detail on the second part of the agenda, what to look for when you do have to purchase your own insurance coverage or someone is purchasing it on your behalf. So we'll discuss what the details of the policy are, who is covered under that policy, you know, what activities under the policy are covered, what activities are not covered, which is not too many, but there's a couple key ones here that I'd like you to be aware of if you're not already aware of them. Some supplemental services that surround your insurance coverage, and then when you leave. And then we'll just do a brief feature on the second half of what to look for in that next insurance policy that will cover you. So your current coverage. Now SUMMIT, it stands for Stanford University Medical Indemnity and Trust. We are a full insurance company. It's called a captive insurance company because it is unlike being held by, like shareholders, like some of the big insurance companies are, or completely owned by its owners as a mutual insurance company would be. We are owned by Stanford Healthcare and Lucile Packard. Those are our only owners. They give us our capital, they pay our salaries, and it's known as a captive insurance company. And they're domiciled in Bermuda. We put it over in Bermuda because that lets us be a little bit more flexible with regards to our coverages and the terms of our coverages. Gives us some tax advantages to save us all money as well. So SUMMIT provides medical malpractice, also known as healthcare professional liability. They're kind of interchangeable terms. And also general liability, just in case something, a trip and fall, advertising or personal injury incident should happen, that's where general liability comes in. Provides it to all of those entities, all the hospitals, the School of Medicine, their employees of those entities, the faculty physicians, adjunct faculty, fellows, residents, you're all covered. So I'm part of a company known as the Risk Authority. We are, like I say, over on Page Mill. We're kind of like SUMMIT. We're a subsidiary of Stanford Healthcare and Lucile Packard. We are Stanford Healthcare employees, though. We have our badges just like everybody else. We also do some consulting work for other healthcare systems outside of the Stanford University healthcare system, which is kind of like how we've been kind of spun off a little bit so we can do that consulting work. Now, the SUMMIT policy, there's two types of coverage with regards to liability. There's claims made coverage and there's occurrence coverage. And claims made is applicable to this policy. And basically what claims made means is that when the patient or, you know, someone affiliated with the patient actually makes a legal complaint or notice of a claim to us, it will be in that particular policy year when the claim is made. Occurrence policies, like if someone were to incur an injury, let's say in 2012, an occurrence policy would post to a 2012 year, but if they didn't know about the medical incident in 2012, didn't manifest itself into something concerning to them until 2015, and that's when they reported it, then it would go under the 2015 year. And that's what we do here. It's just because it helps avoid those long gaps between when the actual medical incident happened and when someone would actually report alleged negligence. It just makes the time frame shorter, and that helps for many reasons, pricing and analysis and dealing with the claim. So, as we said, professional liability, also known as medical malpractice, covers services performed by you in the treatment and care of any patient, and also provides indemnification to that patient or that patient's family, right? Makes them whole again for any alleged financial injury that they, or medical expenses that they felt they have incurred through a medical incident. Second part of it, which is just as important, is part of what we pay as part of the claim are legal expenses incurred by the person who has the allegation of a claim against them, right? You have to pay the lawyers. Obviously, we don't expect our insureds to pay the lawyers. That's also a second part of our coverage, is to pay those legal expenses associated with a claim. And the amount of coverage available, we call them limits of liability. They're usually mentioned in increments of $1 million on up. We don't like to publicize it, but we have more than adequate limits to cover even the most unanticipated severe type of loss. We're very well, our capacity, as we call it, is very high. Now, who is covered under the policy? In order to be covered by Summit Insurance, faculty physician, and these can be one of the three. It doesn't obviously have to be all three. You're a member of the medical staff of the hospitals, you are employed by the School of Medicine, or you have a faculty appointment through the School of Medicine. Following categories of physicians are covered by the Summit program, as we just said. Faculty physicians, adjunct clinical faculty, only when performing Stanford duties, the fellows, the residents, for activities performed within their designated scope of duties. So, your chair, GRE, so on and so forth, you're approved, you get the sign-offs for your traditional course of study and medical practice. We cover you in that capacity. I'll get to in a couple of slides kind of like instances where we've seen examples of people outside these kind of traffic lanes, wanting to extend coverage to them, and I'll kind of explain what those situations are and why we try to dissuade against those type of scenarios. So, no coverage extended to medical staff unless at the time of the acts or the omissions, the alleged negligence, the alleged negligent patient care, they hold a medical staff appointment through the hospitals or School of Medicine. No coverage extended to residents unless at the time of the acts or omissions, they were employed, obviously, by the hospitals. Obviously, we're not going to cover somebody who has not yet joined us or has departed from us. Once again, employees for acts of omission outside the scope of their duties, including those after the termination of their appointment or employment. Now let's turn to what activities are covered. It's pretty broad. It's pretty commonsensical, something that even if you're not insurance, I think makes a lot of sense. We only cover services provided on behalf of the hospitals where payment is traceable through the hospital billing and accounting systems. That includes if you're supervising, proctoring, or instructing individuals. You're a student instructor when treating patients that are not yours. It's not your patient, but yeah, right? You're showing someone else, you're treating a patient, you're covered for that as well. And that's a key, that's kind of a common sense thing. So, I don't know what the individual scope of your duties and your care is, but it's kind of like, yeah, if it's not funded through the hospitals or somehow a grant through the School of Medicine, that's kind of like a warning sign that we're getting away from who the activities the policy is intended to cover. So for residents, while working under the direction of the hospital physicians or working as part of your approved residency program, if the physician is going to provide patient care at a non-SHC or LPCH or apart from the School of Medicine, pursuant to his employment, coverage may be provided by that institution instead of Summit. So that makes sense, just like we're covering you all for what you do for the hospitals and interacting with the School of Medicine. We're not going to step in and cover an individual if they're being paid by Sutter or Kaiser or so on and so forth, right? That's for Sutter or Kaiser's insurance programs, parallel to ours, for them to cover your activities there. So what activities are not covered? Now, this is the situation we've run into it a couple of times over the last few months. Moonlighting inside or outside of the hospitals is not covered. So, you know, we had a situation, it was a couple months ago where urgent care, right, they had a few shifts open. They had to fill those shifts. And we were requested to provide coverage to some folks that were not associated with urgent care. They weren't credentialed for it. It wasn't part of their residency or their fellowship study. They said, hey, you know, we're just in a jam. Can you cover us for that? And that's one of the very few exceptions where it's like, I'm sorry, we really, you know, find it difficult to make an accommodation. So, we ask them, it's like, if you have a question, you know, I know, like, especially for urgent care, those type of things, those things come up very suddenly, and they're in a difficult position, and I know it's not easy, but what we asked some of the urgent care folks to do, and what we asked a couple of times prior to that for another department, is just try to anticipate a contingency plan when you're in these situations, and kind of let's work with you to go up with a contingency plan. The critical thing is that individual who's filling in for a discipline that they're not credentialed for, or they're not in a program for, we need to get you credentialed for that. It's usually a fairly easy process with everybody working together to fulfill that, but that's something that we just all need to work ahead to try to accommodate that. Once again, if perhaps this work is not through the hospitals, for some reason you're associated with another healthcare system, or it's a grant through another, like the VA, for example, something like that, you know, we will work with you to try to contact that organization to say, hey, you know, coverage really is more suited and more equitable to be covered under your medical malpractice professional liability coverage. So can we work something out there? But so some of our supplemental services that are not associated with the directly with your coverage, you know, we can issue certificates of insurance. You know, you've moved on, you're working for another hospital, you're working on your own, you're working for a physician group, you're doing whatever. You know, sometimes people want to have evidence of past coverage, where, you know, that's something that's very standard for us. Or for some reason you're doing some other work where you need evidence of insurance right now, we're more than happy to provide you what's known as a certificate of insurance. It's a one-page piece of paper, tells you the policy name, the limits, it's got your name on it, shows that you're covered, like your auto ID card. Claims history letters, you know, if it's obviously very rare actually for a fellow or a resident to have a claim, but, you know, people in their due diligence when they want to hire you or associate with you want to just make sure, just like we want to make sure for our physicians here, what's going on with them in their past. So we issue those claims history letters. The risk authority, who I work for, we have a clinical risk management unit. And that remains your contact to report incidences, or your department chair, or whoever you've designated within your sphere of practice to actually report the medical incident. They'll take it from there. They've got obviously a full procedure where they fill out the information and proceed. Have information on our PEARL and ME programs. I don't know how familiar you are with those. PEARL is kind of like a physician assistance program. If someone is undergoing allegations of negligence, it's peer physicians that are members of this committee that kind of work with someone who's undergoing a lawsuit or a threat of a lawsuit and say, hey, these are the steps you can take. I've, you know, been through it, whatever. It's just a peer support group. It's very structured, though. It's really helpful. And ME is just, it's interactive technology. It's on the cloud. We associate with a vendor. It's basically a program. It's like, oh, you're undergoing a colonoscopy. Well, here, patient A, please click on this link. Instead of having to explain the procedure to you verbally, here's a video on it. you know, and it shows you the whole nine yards. It's a consistent message. It's a comprehensive message. And then the patient can watch it and then follow up with you as far as any further details. So those are other things that we offer within the risk authority besides just the insurance coverage. Now, when you depart, you're on your way, you're going to continue, obviously, to be covered. Yeah.
Quick question.
Sure.
That's something we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. It's rare for residents and fellows to be sued. In the rare case that they are and the suit is somewhat frivolous,
is there any option within the are we recording it? Yeah, is there any option to actually, like, counter within this policy, or is that something that could be supported to sort of counter sue if it's a frivolous suit and you don't want that on your resume early on in your career, and if it's frivolous, is there a way to counter that within this program?
Yeah, I don't think we would take it as far as like a counter suit,
right?
But our claims team is got many years of experience. We work also those claims folks work with law firms that mm-hmm. obviously. That's their specialty for many years is mm-hmm. medical malpractice.
Yeah.
So they were very successful with regards to like quashing suits like that.
Understood.
These folks have seen like everything in the book and they can kind of, you know, smell it out right away. I mean, that's one Stanford Healthcare, the university has enjoys quite a reputation
right.
in the legal community. The folks on the other end, the defendant end, the patient end, mm-hmm. Any lawyers that they're going to hire that specialize in this, they're well aware of our reputation, our legal team's reputation.
It better not be frivolous.
Yeah.
You see, you read about this stuff, so I'm wondering if these kind of policies have that, but probably don't have that issue here.
Yeah. It would be very unusual, and I think that we're both within the risk authority and that the attorneys that we use are very proficient in making that a very low probability occurrence. So, like I said, when you leave, you'll continue to be covered for your practice here, your healthcare here, obviously. Going forward, once you have left, obviously, we're not covering you any longer, as we've stated before, because you're not part of the hospital system any longer. I don't think this probably applies. I don't think any of you were providing care before 2005. If you were, let me know. Some had existed before that date, but it was just a different policy structure. And then one of the good advantages here, which we'll get into as far as what you should look for in your coverage, is that since we're claims made, as we said, you were providing care in 2015, someone comes forward in 2018, says Dr. A did this to me in 2015, we're still, covering your activities because you were a resident or a fellow here at that time. So you're going to have coverage for those acts. Were there any other questions with regards to your current coverage under the Summit policy?
How long did tail provisions last for?
It lasted for our policy indefinitely. Indefinitely, yeah. I have no idea how I'm doing on time. It seems like it's been very short. I mean, I'm not done yet, but I just wanna see. Okay, well, not bad. Yes, once you have finished, what do you want to try to look for in your next coverage? So a lot of the things that I just talked about, we've only kind of said one kind of no thing with regards to the moonlighting. I think we're pretty liberal and wide ranging, and that's on purpose. That's what we're here for, is to protect all of you. So we're not trying to play some kind of shell game that a normal insurer might try to do. So the first thing is, obviously this will be greatly dictated by whatever your first opportunity is once leaving, who you're working for. Are you going out on your own? Are you joining an independent practice? Are you joining a practice that's owned by a healthcare system and or a hospital? You know, what is your circumstance? But if you have the choice, the medical professional policies are issued kind of in two different ways, individual versus group. You know, you go out to a, let's say, one of the major medical malpractice carriers is the Doctor's Company. I don't know if you've heard of it. They're actually domiciled up in Napa, but they cover physicians countrywide. They issue policies. You're a physician. You go there. You present your information, your claims history. They can cover you alone on a policy that's just in your name. Limits offered are generally, the standard is $1 million per occurrence or medical incident, $3 million aggregate, and that's on an annual basis. These are annual limits. So even though your current summit coverage is far in excess of this, when you kind of get out there with the normal medical malpractice insurers, they generally offer coverage with these type of limits on an annual basis. As I say here, limits of 2 and 4 million are available from some carriers. Obviously, a bit of an extra price. The differential will depend on the carrier and your specialty. Due to the, you know, as you may know, we have tort reform here still in California. We have MICRA, right, which limits damages to $250,000. For non-medical related, right, injuries, right, just pain and suffering, any alleged non-medical treatment related expenses are capped at $250,000 here in the state of California. So given that fact, these limits are usually adequate. You know, there are opportunities, especially if you work for a group or a health system, they're going to be like us. They're going to have limits in excess of this. But these are the standard because of MICRA. Also check whether it's an individual or a group policy, or ask whoever your practice leader, administrator, whoever the person is that oversees the insurance coverage for your new home is, you know, you're the payments associated with the lawyer expenses to defend you should not reduce those limits above. That one million is reserved just for payments to the claimant and or the claimant's family, right? The indemnification, making indemnification, as you may know, means to financially make someone whole again where they were before the incident. So that money and those limits is reserved for those folks. And then the lawyer bills are on top of that. A group policy may be cheaper, as you know, the more physicians you put in a group, you get a group discount. It's just like going to a rock concert, 8 or more, you get a discount. There's you know, if that group already has really good experience, the carrier may give that group an overall discount that would reduce your premium. But as you might guess, You're so goes the group, so goes you. The group is good, big, limited loss experience, you're going to get the discounts, and vice versa. Physicians can be individually underwritten within groups. So there is some individual measure taken in those group policies. It kind of varies carrier to carrier. Always look for, and this is, it's pretty standard as far as I'm aware in other carriers' insurance policies, but they do contain a consent to settle. So, you know, you're unfortunate enough to be locked in a legal complaint, you know, you're going through whatever, arbitration, litigation, whatever it may be. The policy and the carrier is mandated to consult with you before a settlement is made. So, if you feel, you know, your insurer is telling you, oh, well, I think we should settle for $500,000, and for whatever reasons, your reputation, your ethics, your steadfastness, you say, well, I don't believe it warrants $500,000, you can continue talking with your carrier. They should have your consent to before they pay a specific dollar amount or settle a case. And lastly, reporting any kind of incident. We don't do it at Summit. Most certainly we do not do it at Summit. And other carriers, by and large, the protocol is not to penalize someone if you're just like, oh, well, I saw patient A a couple of weeks ago. They mentioned either verbally or in some subsequent written communication that they were not satisfied with the standard of care. Maybe should I tell my insurance carrier? Are they going to raise my premium? You know, will it be some sort of other reprimand to me with regards to the carrier? No. You know, all the major carriers do not penalize you financially, choosing to renew you or non-renew your coverage for just reporting an incident. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite. Insurers want to know as soon as possible, kind of put it on their radar, that something has happened. We call it a notice, not a claim, a notice, and a notice should not count against you. So, talked about this a few minutes ago, occurrence versus claim made. You know, the main advantage in occurrence policies are you don't have to worry about the tail coverage. You know, it's one and done. You're covered in year 2015 forever under an occurrence policy. For anything that happens in 2015, even if it's reported in 2020, you're covered. The claims made policies, as I said, it's much more standard in medical malpractice. Occurrence coverage is rare. And so the only kind of drawback, if you will, for claims made policies is not for here. As we just said a couple minutes ago, we're not going to charge extra money or not cover you for acts after you have left while you were here. But the protocol for most standard professional medical insurance carriers is if you're on a claims made, you have to leave. It's known as tail coverage. I don't know if you've heard that phrase yet, but basically that is money that you or your physician group, if it's in your physician services agreement or whatever, that's more money than you have to come up with to say, hey, I'm leaving practice A. I want to make sure that my time here has covered no matter when an incident is reported. The insurer will give you or your group, whoever's paying for your current coverage, the option of saying, okay, well, for a certain price, we'll cover you for claims that are reported a year after you leave, or we'll give you coverage for a period of 3 years after you leave. It's usually 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, and then unlimited in perpetuity. And of course, as you might guess, the cost for that coverage climbs the longer the reporting period you want to have. So some supplemental coverage features apart from the medical malpractice or the medical professional liability. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, you're covered for this currently on the same Summit policy, general liability, which includes personal and advertising injury. So in case someone makes an allegation, yes, you invaded my privacy by sending my particulars to an outside entity that had no right looking at them, you know, that's a violation of my privacy. So I'm, you know, even though you didn't do anything with regards to harming me during patient care, it's a personal injury, and that's where general liability would come in. Another important thing is privacy data breach liability, and that's also known as cyber liability. Obviously, we know with our handheld devices, everything we do obviously is on computers. Now we all know about the stories of the hacks and the intrusions and so on and so forth, which can be just as devastating financially as a healthcare professional liability loss. So whether it's through your practice, your medical group, your hospital system, wherever you end up, you know, they're going to have it. If for some reason you're going out individually or it's a smaller practice, you should ask them. It's like, do you have that type of coverage? Do you have that separate coverage? It's very important to have a separate policy with separate limits apart from your medical professional coverage on there. And then, as I mentioned with the PERL and the ME supplemental programs, where it's like if a carrier should have something like that, it'd be preferable, obviously. to help you along. And I think that's it. So does anybody have any other questions or comments?
Do you have a sense, depending on like the torque and the micro laws in other states, what we should generally be looking for in terms of our coverage limits?
Yeah, I have a general idea. If you're going somewhere like the medical professional environment is not very favorable in the, like New York, state of New York, in Florida, places in Illinois, like especially Chicago, Cook County is notorious for not being pro medical policy or medical establishment, I should say. Generally, I believe you can find, given that environment, you can find policies with higher limits. Some states have, I don't know, I must admit, I don't know if New York or Florida has them. Sometimes they have state funds that will help supplement a private insurer's limits of liability too, to help increase that capacity. But, you know, once again, I'm not a lawyer, so this is my educated speculation, but it is speculation nonetheless. When your policy limits are exceeded, they can't, I've never heard of a circumstance where a person's policy limits are exceeded and there's more damages and they go after that person's assets. I've never, ever heard of that anywhere in the country. So usually what they will do is go after the practice or the hospital system where the care was rendered, say, well, the physician limits are exhausted. So you have limits, hospital A, where the coverage occurred. So we need your limits here to kick in. That's the by far the most common kind of scenario. Any other questions? All right. Well, I don't know where I am with regards to time, but I don't think I'm too early. 5:39. That's pretty good. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your attention and your attendance.